the first time for us, so bear with us. I asked Meredith about 6 months ago if she'd like to present a lecture with me, and she jumped at the opportunity with a little pushing from me, too. I'm on the board trustees of APMA, and Meredith is a sophomore at University of North Carolina in the School of Public Health, working on a degree in nutrition. She also has a very strong interest in fitness and exercise physiology. So that's why we came up with this topic. And one thing we've done, foot and ankle overuse injuries, and we've subtitled it New Year's Resolution Heel Pain. Because in my practice, and I think most of podiatry practices around the country, what we typically see is somebody in December and January decides, I'm going to get fit this year, I'm going to make the New Year's resolution, I'm going to change the way I'm doing things. They join the fitness center. They have 1 or 2 days of instruction, then they're on their own. And they figure, I'm spending all this money, so I'm going to get my money's worth, and they do too much too soon. So they get an overuse injury, and typically they join the fitness center in January, they're in my office in February or March with heel pain. And we've started to see there are a lot of other syndromes that we see too. So we're going to go through those other syndromes. One of the things that we find, why do we see these overuse injuries happening now where we didn't 20 years ago? Well, obviously, there's an increase in the general concept of fitness. We're seeing a lot more physical activity in the patients, especially the older population, being the baby boomers, as they're coming along. They're being much more fit now than they were at this than that 60-year-old was in 1950s. So we're seeing quite a bit of change there. Health and fitness centers just exploded in the 80s and 90s. There's one on every corner. There's one at the Chinatown metro stop. There's a Washington Fitness Club right above the metro stop. So they're all over the place. There are more than 90 million people in the United States are members of a fitness center. Roughly 1 out of 3 now with the population that we have. Obviously, with APHA and the Healthy People 2010, we know about that publication. This was done by the Health and Human Services. The physical activity is number one leading health indicator in the United States, and obesity is number two. So those two things obviously fall within the politics of APHA and the things APHA wants to do. But despite those things happening, the population in the United States is becoming more obese. If you've been in the exhibit hall, I went by I don't remember what booth it was or what they were measuring body fat, they were measuring body fat percentage, all that. I did it. I became greatly depressed. I thought I was fairly fit. And ironically, our fat percentage was about the same. I mean, you look at me and look at her, and our fat percentage was about...
The machine's not right.
So we decided that, yeah, we're not real happy with the machine.
Okay, so I actually trained to become a fitness instructor last year, and through that I have heard many definitions of fitness, but this is my favorite one. This is the one I go by. Fitness is defined as good health and physical condition as a result of an exercise program and proper nutrition. The four components of fitness that are usually stressed are body composition, flexibility, cardiovascular fitness, and musculoskeletal fitness. And the factors that influence the desire to be fit are the medical need, the media influence, peer pressure, family pressure, the social aspect of becoming fit, and the psychological aspect of obesity and fitness.
We're seeing a lot more of that psychological aspect in there. You think, how important could that be? But we're starting to see more and more of that, and as exemplified by the programs, what's the one on NBC, the Biggest Loser. You see those programs now. There's just a lot of psychological aspect of obesity and fitness. Overuse injuries. Overuse injuries we see can be related to bone, soft tissue, muscle, any of those aspects. But the best definition I've found is bone or muscle tendon microtrauma caused by repetitive stress without adequate healing time. So you can get the repetitive stress and not develop the overuse injury if you've got adequate healing. And we're going to try to talk a lot about pediatrics, because I see a lot of pediatric overuse injuries. These kids now, especially soccer, we have a lot of soccer and hockey leagues in our area, and you see a lot of the kids are in 4 or 5 hour to 2 hour long soccer practices each week, plus another 2 or 3 games each week. They just don't have time to heal. You know, the kids heal very quickly, but they've got to have the time to heal. Do you have a question?
What is that for healing in general?
It depends on the injury itself. And I think we actually go over... it depends on the injury itself. If you got an acute trauma, then generally when the swelling goes down and the pain goes down, that's adequate healing time. If you've got that stress fracture, you've got to have the time to heal that stress fracture and get total coalition of the fracture before they get back to their practices. So it really depends on, and we go in, there's a definition coming up later. I thought it was on this next slide, but it's not. Four stages of overuse injury progression. Number one, pain after the activity. Especially think of that 12-year-old soccer player. If he's having pain, if that 12-year-old boy's having pain after soccer practice, that's a bad sign. Pain during the activity means that the injury is getting worse. But he can still go through, they can still do the activity, they can still perform. Pain during the activity affecting the performance. I mean, they can perform, but they're not as fast, they're not as quick, they need more breaks, they need more time out off the field. And in chronic pain at rest. If you've got a kid that's got chronic pain at rest, that's a problem. That's a red flag really waving pretty strong.
Factors that influence overuse injuries are improper training, excessive stress on a specific body part. Improper use of the equipment is a main one that we see. I go to a college gym and no one knows how to use the equipment. Even the people who work in the gym don't know how to use the equipment correctly. Over-exercising through an injury, and psychological aspect.
That over-exercising really comes into that, the chronic overuse of the kids. Again, that soccer player is a perfect example. Why are the children at higher risk? Number one, they're changing. Their bodies are changing almost on a daily basis. They're growing. So bone is growing, muscles are growing, tissue is growing. That tissue needs time to recover. Inability to recognize the signs of injury. I was talking with one of the optometrists if you've been by the podiatry exhibit booth, we've got optometry right there with us, and I was talking with one of the optometrists that said, I didn't realize when I was in the fifth grade that everybody didn't see the way I was seeing. I needed glasses when I was in the fifth grade. I didn't know it. I didn't have that knowledge basis to know I wasn't seeing normally. So these kids may think it's normal for the feet to hurt. It's normal for the legs and their knees to hurt. 6 to 18-year-old participants in organized sports, roughly 30 to 45 million in the United States in organized sports. These aren't kids that are participating in PE in school. These are kids that are in some type of league, some type of organized sport, little league, they're in a soccer league, whatever. Increase due to accessibility. Those programs are developing. Every community has a Parks and Recreation Department now that sponsors all these leagues. And it's the cool thing to do. You know, it's a very social thing for the kids to do, is participate in these leagues. And overtraining can cause injuries, which can cause burnout. We see that a lot. I've got a friend that's, his son is just a great baseball pitcher. But he's been pitching for 6 months out of every year. He's now 15. He's been pitching 6 months out of every year since he was 7 or 8 years old. And he's just burned out. He doesn't like baseball anymore because he's so burned out on it. Trish. The parents are the first thing, but sometimes the parents are so pushing that they want the kid to do that activity. And I hope, with my daughter standing behind me, hopefully we didn't push them too much into the activity.
I didn't play sports.
I was a high school and college tennis player, and you know, my son played high school tennis for a year, and he decided, I just don't like it anymore. So he stopped playing. But if I were that kind of parent that just pushed and pushed and pushed, then I would be pushing him in and training every day, and you got to get the coaches involved. There has to be some adult overseeing that has common sense to kind of back up and say, wait a minute, these kids are doing too much. Particular problems we'll get into. There's posterior muscle group problems, posterior problems. We'll divide these into anatomical areas. So posterior problems we see a lot of: Achilles tendonitis, Sievers disease, and gastroxoleus strain. Achilles tendonitis, inflammation of the Achilles tendon, either in its body, in the muscle, or at its attachment. Typically we'll see it at the attachment site, are just slightly proximal to the attachment site. Commonly associated with retrocalcaneal bursitis, you'll see that classical bump at the back of the heel, and we see this a lot in kids. A lot of that bump is from the shoe gear and the shoe pressure. You get that bursa forming, especially in the higher top cleats. Most common cause involving dorsiflexion. As the foot comes up, the Achilles tendon gets strained. And the stair stepper is the thing we see in the fitness center, that we see classical Achilles tendonitis from the stair stepper. The treatment, elevate the heel, lift the heel up, so we use the heel lift with it. Control the pronation, the excessive motion of the foot, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. If that doesn't get it calmed down, immobilize them. That doesn't help. Physical therapy, antiphoresis, ultrasound, things like that help. Stretching. Occasionally we'll give a steroid injection in the area, although with the kids we typically won't do that, but the adults we typically will. And occasionally you'll need to do a surgical procedure, not unlike the advancement procedure that was discussed in the previous session that we did here.
And prevention is to decrease stressful dorsiflexion activities, keep feet perpendicular to the steps, and slow the pace. Pace is a big problem. Adjust the height of the step if it's possible. On most machines it's not, but sometimes you can. And then cross-training is a big part of it.
You'll see the cross-training as a common theme as we go through the prevention aspects of the problems. Sievers disease is retrocalcaneal apophysitis. There's a growth plate at the back of the heel. With Achilles tendon attaches, you'll get some micro trauma there and some micro movement of that growth plate. That's called Sievers disease or calcaneal apophysitis. Very common. In my practice, I see it more with males than I do females. And I see it more in that 8 years old to 12 to 14 year old age group. Females are generally 10 to 14 in that ballpark. We see it in two types of kids. We see it in either obese kids that are being forced to exercise, because parents want them to lose weight and they're being forced to do things. Or we see it in that very athletic kid that goes from soccer to basketball to baseball to and they really never have a season off. So we see it a lot in those kids. It's inflammation posterior calcaneal growth plate, again the ages, and it always resolves when the growth plate closes. So this is not a problem that they'll have forever. It always resolves. When the growth plate closes, Sievers disease goes away. And we see it with jumping and running sports, tennis, basketball, and a lot in baseball, too. Inclined treadmill. The flat treadmill generally doesn't cause it, but the inclined treadmill puts stress on the retrocalcaneal aspects. So in the fitness center, in the adults, we don't see the Sievers disease in the adults, but in the kids that are working out in the fitness center, we'll see it on the high-impact aerobics and the elevated treadmill. Heel lifts generally will take care of the problem to calm it down pretty quickly. Control the pronation of the foot, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, rest, and immobilization, the ones that we can't get better doing the simple things. We'll just put them in a cast or a cam walker, and that'll immobilize it, and that'll calm down the strain.
And to prevent it, just lower the incline on the treadmill or go to cross-training.
Lateral problems, peroneal tendonitis and lateral ankle sprains. Peroneal tendonitis, inflammation of the peroneal tendons. There are actually three on the side on the lateral side of the foot. And we'll see it occasionally with a tendon tear, which would be more of a traumatic issue, or a chronic inflammation resulting in a tendon tear. One of the problems we see is on the calf strengthening exercise machines, and this is one where you'll invert and evert the foot, and that inversion will cause that peroneal tendonitis. So that's one we commonly see it in. Treatment, control that inversion, eversion. If that's what's causing it, you want to control that motion. Again, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, immobilization, physical therapy, steroid injection occasionally. Again, with the younger patients, typically we won't inject them. With the older ones, we will. And surgical repair. If there is a tear, quite often we have to go and surgically repair that tear to take care of it.
And to prevent it, strengthen the inverters and everters, or use more sagittal plane motion and less frontal plane motion, and again, cross-training.
So if you look at the difference, we're using straight sagittal plane motion on this one compared to previously. You had the inversion and eversion there. So you can see the motion of the foot there, the position of the foot compared to the sagittal plane motion there. Lateral ankle sprains, usually a traumatic injury. It's typically not an overuse injury. It can occur if overuse is if you're doing a lot of that inversion, we can actually end up with a lateral ankle sprain. Treatment, obviously rest, ice, that rice diet, rest, ice, compression, elevation. We'll put them in an ankle brace to try to protect it while they're recovering from the injury. Immobilization, and on an occasional basis, again, generally in the adult population, not as much in the pediatric population, we'll go in and do a primary lateral ankle stabilization.
and to control the inversion of the heel with valgus heel wedge or ankle taping and ankle brace.
In my practice, if we've got a kid that's had a traumatic ankle sprain, I tell them at least the rest of this season, you're going to be in taped and braced for every practice, every game. No matter if they're doing great after 2 weeks, it doesn't matter, because I want to prevent that next injury. Plantar problems, capsulitis, plantar fasciitis are the two most common ones that we see. Capsulitis is inflammation, typically the metatarsal plantar joint, the plantar aspect, and it's usually caused by repetitive tiptoe activity. We see this a lot in the free weight lifters. You can see the example there doing the weightlifting on the front, as well as some of the machines, like the one in the lower right-hand corner, where you're actually pushing up a lot with a lot of weight. So we see it a lot. Step aerobics, dance aerobics will do it too. The treatment, relieve the pressure on the ball of the foot. Anti-inflammatories, possibly steroid injections. And if you've got that hammer toe that's sitting like that, that's causing the retrograde force on the bottom, correcting the hammer toe gets rid of that retrograde force. So sometimes that's the only thing that'll take care of the problem.
And to prevent it, cross-training or gradual increase in activity is a big thing. People like to go from 50 pounds to 150 pounds when weight shouldn't be increased that fast.
Plantar fasciitis is probably the most common overuse injury that I see. Inflammation of the ligament that maintains the arch at the bottom of the foot. Plantar fascia runs from the metatarsal plantar joint to the heel. Most common foot and ankle injury. And seen typically with a sudden increase or change. We see this a lot with, again, the people that go from walking a mile a day to walking 3 miles a day, and they don't gradually increase it. The elliptical trainer and the treadmill are probably the most common culprits in the fitness center that we see. Treatment, control the strain of the plantar fascia, whether using inserts or orthotics. Anti-inflammatories generally help. Steroid injections will help. Immobilization, physical therapy, and sometimes we'll do a surgical procedure, plantar fasciotomy, or ESWT is external shockwave therapy. The prevention?
Oh, a gradual increase in activity, stretching, and cross-training.
Stretching is really a key with the prevention. So as you get into those fitness programs, the stretching in all the body parts really is something that, and I know as a trainer, she sees it's just not done enough.
No one stretches. It's terrible.
Except the people she trains.
I don't stretch.
Stress fractures, chondromalacia patella, two things that we'll see fairly frequently. Stress fractures, osseous reaction to repetitive strain, frequently happens to the lesser metatarsals. Generally, second is the most common, at least the ones that I see. I think literature will back that up. Treadmill, step aerobics are common culprits. We'll see it on the treadmill a lot. The step aerobics is bad for it. And even the water aerobics, where you're water up to the waist and you're still jumping, still pounding on that foot. We'll see it a lot in that situation. Treatment, obviously, number one, eliminate the activity. And we find that decreasing the activity is not nearly as productive as eliminating the activity. Get them out of it. Get them off the foot. Things will calm down pretty quickly. Immobilization, and if you get these, especially in a class athlete, I treat a fair number of professional golfers in our situation, and we actually have friends that are professional wrestlers too, although we haven't treated them for anything yet.
Okay.
But those people have a financial interest to get back to the activity as quick as possible. So in those people, we put them in a bone stem. And unfortunately, with a lot of your regular patients, a bone stem is a financial issue. They can't get it covered by their insurance company. But when you're dealing with professional athletes, it's not a financial issue. They generally get it covered pretty quickly.
And prevention is a gradual increase in activity, cross-training, and appropriate control of motion and strain in the shoe.
Chondromalacia patella, inflammation of articular surface of the patella, the surface behind the kneecap, caused by compensation knee due to excessive pronation of the foot. I see it mostly in bikers. We have a large biking community in our area, and we've got a couple of big bike races in our area. So we see it a lot in the runners, but we also see it in biking a lot. Treatment, rest, ice, non-steroidals, Chopat strap, which is a little strap that goes right underneath the knee. You can use it for same type thing for tennis elbow. And then orthotics. And the orthotics control the motion of the foot. By controlling the motion of the foot, the decelerators, the anterior muscle group, doesn't have to work as hard. There's not as much strain on the patella. Therefore, you don't get the chondromalacia patella.
And to prevent it, cross-training, control of the pronation with orthotics, and adjusting the bike seat to the correct position, and strengthening of the quads and hamstrings equally.
We see that a lot with the bike, that people just get on, especially the fitness center, you get on the bicycle, work out, and they don't change the seat, the height of the seat for whatever the person. So if you get, like Neil, who's substantially taller than I am, if he gets on it, his length is going to be different than mine. So I need to adjust it if I get on the seat after Neil. Solutions they ever use, that was the question she asked, encourage 1 to 2 days of rest each week. So you don't want to go that 7 days a week exercising. Give yourself a couple of days to recover. Limit the increase to 10% a week. So if you want to go from that 100 pounds on the military press to 200 pounds, gradually increase a week. If people are walking, I tell them to pick a distance that you want to do and increase by 10 to 15% each week. And they say, well, it's going to take me forever to get to 3 miles a week, 3 miles a day. But you'll gradually get there without causing the stress to the body.
Encourage cross training and discourage single muscle training and encourage muscle group training. I have friends that train only their pecs. They don't train their triceps or biceps or back or anything, and they look ridiculous. Encourage cross training again. That's very important. Emphasize fun and safety. If you're going to have fun while you're working out, you're more likely to work out, and you're more likely to be like, oh, okay, I'm tired, I should take a break. And promote proper training techniques and focus on overall fitness and health.
Getting the coaches involved with those teams is so important. And we did it for a few years in our community. We had Sports Medicine Day with the coaches of the schools, as well as many of the rec departments that we could get. And we haven't done that in a few years, and my new partner in practice wants to get that going back up. I think it's a great idea, but we have trouble finding. The teachers don't want to come because they don't get paid to come to that seminar that day. So if we can get the schools to fund it, we can get it back going again. References, the Healthy People 2010 was one APMA webpage. Has a lot of great information out there about foot injuries, foot treatment. Article by Barkley and Mitara. And a lot of just personal experience, 18 years of practice in a fairly strong sports medicine practice gives you a lot of experience, and fitness and nutrition lectures from Meredith at UNC Chapel Hill. We do want to acknowledge Moore Regional Hospital Health and Fitness Center. They allowed us to take the pictures in their facility, and I had a beautiful model there for the pictures.
Got my little workout in.
Yeah, she's working out. Well, no, Dad, let me finish on the treadmill before we go to the next one. I need another 10 minutes. Questions? Yes. The key thing, the question is, how do you get the message out to those coaches in the rec leagues and things like that? A lot of the high school coaches have had some training, and they have a better idea what they're doing, but the rec leagues are really where we see a lot of the problems. And visibility, I mean, you have to be there. You have to get out. You have to have somebody showing up for games, for preseason practices, and say, do a seminar at one of these Saturday mornings and say, you know, between your games, come over here and we'll talk about how to tape somebody, how to strap somebody, how to be aware of the potential problems, that list of pain after activity, pain during activity. Those are things we try to teach the general lay coach, that these are potential warning signs that you need to be aware of. And the coach doesn't want their star sitting on the bench. They want him back out. Now, I've been team doctor for the high school that I went to, the high school she went to, and the high school my son went to. I've been team doctor for 19 years at that high school. And all the coaches understand that I will let a player play if he's hurt, but I will not let a player play if he's injured. And it's taken me a while to get them to understand the difference between the two. You know, if I hit her here, she's going to be hurting, but she's not injured. If I twist her arm and break it, she's injured. Okay, and I'll be arrested for child abuse. But that's hopefully that visibility, that's the key thing. Yes, ma'am.
If they are trained professionals, usually a trained trainer. Sorry, that sounded bad. But they'll have proper training, they'll know what they're doing, and they'll actually have a certificate. There's a program you go through and you take a test, and they will know what they're doing. But at most of the college-level gyms and at the really sketchy ones that most people wouldn't really go to, but they're really cheap, so some people will, they'll not really know what they're doing. But if they have a certificate, just ask if they're certified. If they're certified, they should know what they're doing.
And it's tough. You may... What we see a lot is the participant will get 1 or 2 days training on the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll come in, they'll get their overall orientation to the facility, and, you know, this is a treadmill. Everybody knows how to use a treadmill. But they get very little training on it. The trainers know what they're doing, but the participant doesn't. So the participant really needs to get better training.
Or they'll train you for a specific machine, but they'll do something where you have to have a trainer with you. Like, they'll incorporate an exercise ball with a machine. You can't do that by yourself. But usually if you go to a trainer and ask, can you show me how to use this machine correctly, they're very accommodating, and they'll usually help you.
Yeah, we didn't go into the traumatic injuries that you'll see with the people in the free weight room that'll be, you know, doing incline presses without a spotter. And they've got too much weight, and they drop the weight, and it hits them in the head, or the weight falls off, hits them in the foot. You know, we didn't go into the traumatic injuries that you see like that, which are unfortunately fairly common. Other questions?
Have you noticed the trending towards more fatal injuries and, like, these soccer, Saturday weekend soccer programs with these kids?
I think one of the things we used to see a lot was the heat stroke and the heat problems in North Carolina in August with football practice. We used to see that quite a bit. But we haven't seen that much recently because the coaches are better educated and you know, they can actually they could actually be charged with assault by letting these by restricting the fluid from the kids while they're practicing. So I haven't seen that much. Now the nutritional aspects will come into the healing, but I haven't seen it that much otherwise. One other one that we see a lot, we have 3 ballet companies in town, 2 mm-hmm. or 3, and they all do the Nutcracker every Christmas. Each one has their own performance of the Nutcracker. And every year, I'll see subungual hematomas from the girl that's doing the ice fairy or...
The
main one at the end of the first act. That female...
Oh, the sugar plum fairy.
She always ends up with subungual hematomas. And I've gotten to the point that I've had to numb up the sugar plum fairy before each performance, like the last 3 years. I'd have to actually go in, do a Hallux block on her, numb her up so she could dance, because that's an overuse injury. And you don't think of that. I mean, that's a sports medicine overuse injury. And we see it every year from all 3 groups. And we try to show them some things to eliminate that, but it still happens. Neil?
How often do you see parents who are in denial?
Oh, all the time.
Stop baking and come along.
All the time. You'll see the parents, you know, you're not hurt, get back in there, rub some dirt on it. That was a bit, when I was in school, that was it. Rub some dirt on it, you'll be fine, get back in there. We see that all the time. I'll see that at the football games a lot. Mm-hmm. I make a point that when I see a kid, if I go out on the field or the trainer brings me somebody on the sidelines for me to take a look at, I'll make sure to go up into the stands and find the parent. And they're usually pretty easy to find because they're the one going like this. They're usually pretty easy to find. And you'll go up and tell them, you know, he's okay. It's you know, he bumped it, he just got stepped on, he's okay, he'll be back in a little while. Or, I'm not going to let him back in the game. And usually when the doc goes to the parent, they typically will be pretty accepting, as opposed to the coach or the trainer goes and tells them. It's that psychology, you know, get back in there, tough it out, and hopefully we're getting out of that psychology in sports medicine. Thank you.